Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Something I did come to discuss.
Yes, Mr. Spock, please.
I picked this up from Dr. McCoy's log. We have a crew member aboard who's showing signs of stress and fatigue. Reaction time down 9 to 12%. Associational rating norm minus 3.
That's much too low a rating.
He's becoming irritable and quarrelsome, yet he refuses to take rest and rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he has that right, but we found...
Well, crewman's right ends when the safety of the ship begins. Now, that man will go ashore on my orders. What's his name?
James Kirk. Enjoy yourself, Captain. It's an interesting planet. I believe you'll find it quite pleasant. Very much like your Earth. Scouts have detected no animals, artifacts, or force fields of any kind. Only peace, sunshine, and good air. You'll have no problems.
Okay, I've pushed the button.
Boop.
Okay, Jesse. And what does it mean when I push the button, Jesse?
This is a trick. I don't know.
No, it's not a trick.
Are we starting?
Yes, we're starting the show.
It's got Star Trek.
Okay, you're just saying the name of the show. Spoiler alert, Dan's not here, so he can't get mad at me for not doing things in a weird order, because there's no sound clips to play, because he's not here. Dan is on shore leave.
Oh, yeah, that's right. He's at the shore.
And do you know what we're doing this week on the It's Got Star Trek podcast? Jesse?
What?
Oh, okay. I was going to say
other people on the podcast.
Yes, I know there's other people, but we haven't introduced them yet. They're being professionals. Look
Damn
at that.
It.
They're being all silent. They're like, I'm lurking in the background.
I know. That's
our surprise guests. What I was trying to get at is that this week on the It's Got Star Trek podcast, we have welcomed everybody. Just in case we haven't, I'm welcoming people to the It's Got Star Trek podcast, okay? And then... On that podcast, we are going to be discussing the TOS episode,
right.
Shore Leave.
It's a classic TOS.
It is a very classic TOS, and I think we'll have lots to discuss.
Maybe we'll discuss why it should
as to why it's so classic. But first, yes, we do have some guests with us this week, and they're going to help us out because Dan's not here. Dan, as I said,
right,
is on shore leave.
We need help if there's no Dan,
and we need assistance.
There's Chief O'Brien.
We are delighted to have a couple of luminaries,
not jokingly,
luminaries from the Trek podcast universe join us. First, hailing from what is known around these parts as the premier Strange New Worlds podcast, Open Pike Night, we have Jesse. Welcome.
Hey, Jesse.
Welcome.
hey, Jesse, what are you doing?
Hey, what?
I've been working on that probably more than I should admit. I'm very excited to be here,
creepy,
guys. Anytime somebody's like, hey, do you want to watch Star Trek and talk about it? I'm like, yes, I do. So thank you for the opportunity. And it had been a while since I had seen this episode, and I forgot how truly unrelentingly silly it is.
Yes, it really is. It's going to be a great, great conversation. And for that conversation, we are being joined by the gentleman who put the from under in down under.
Wow.
Isaac from Trek 365. Welcome, Isaac.
It's just a crazy idea.
Where would I stay? It is really bizarre.
Dangerous.
It is really bizarre not to have the schizophrenic voices in the back of your head. When we're doing the podcast, because of Dan's sound clip selection, you hear echoes of it. It's like when you think your cell phone rings, but you'll hear certain snatches
or
certain phrases, and it'll trigger something in your brain that's like, where would I stay? B'Elanna's on.
Then you're at work. can you say it out loud? And people and are like, what did you say?
Yes. I have done that as a listener of your show. It has been more than one time when somebody's like, what did you say? And I'm like, nothing. Don't worry about it.
So it's definitely a little odd that Dan isn't here, but luckily, thanks so much. We've got Isaac and Jesse here. And yeah, we're talking about Shore Leave, a very well-known episode. This is probably one of those episodes where lots of non-Star Trek people are familiar with at least maybe the concept.
It's
of
like
scenes.
What they think about when they think about Star Trek, yeah. TOS.
Yes.
So what are your guys' backgrounds with the Shore Leave and maybe TOS more generally?
25 years ago when I... No, so the first Star Trek that I ever saw was the motion picture.
Mm.
And it worked. I know a lot of people saw that and were like, okay, well, clearly Star Trek isn't for me. And I was the opposite. I was like, I got to see more of this. And now, of course, my dad was like, well, you have to watch the rest of the movies first. I was like, all right. But then a couple years ago when Open Pike Night started, I was like, people are going to call in and talk about TOS stuff because Strange New Worlds is prior to that. So I guess I should sit down and watch all of TOS, which I have done. I have now seen every episode of Star Trek except for most of Enterprise.
Mm.
And I legitimately understand why there are people that say TOS is the best Star Trek. Like, it really does have the magic mix of things. And yes, it is incredibly silly and goofy. It was made on a very small budget, and you can see that. But the concepts are really there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like there's a reason that this franchise has been around for 60 years, and it is absolutely TOS. So I'm generally pretty forgiving with it. And it's the kind of thing that I think you should watch. Not with a grain of salt, but, you know, just understand you're watching a low-budget TV show from the 60s, and you can really get a lot out of it. And this episode, I think, is a great example of that, because I was like, the first time I saw it, I was like, okay, so there's going to be it's a guy in a bunny suit. It's a guy in a bunny suit.
And McCoy's the look on McCoy's face is just like, blah! Hilarious.
The tone of this episode is so wacky.
It absolutely
People
is.
People are dying, but there's like fun, upbeat music.
Because it comes right after the Balance of Terror.
Oh, that's right, too. Yeah. In context, I forgot about that.
And Kirk even has a line toward the start, like, after what we've been through, we really need a break. And I'm like, is this early character serialization?
You mean when Kirk is talking about his kinky back or whatever, you know, where he doesn't realize he thinks he's getting massaged by Spock, you know? There's a little spark right there.
And he's really into it. Yeah. And then is a little bit embarrassed when he finds out it's a very good-looking woman doing that. He's like, oh, never mind. I don't want it anymore. I'm like, I get where the spurk comes from.
Absolutely. Like, it's there.
Those slash fic housewives knew what they were watching.
Yeah, first season, too.
Everybody else is catching up. Yeah.
You ever give a man a foot massage?
There's the Pulp Fiction reference. It wouldn't be an It's Got Star Trek episode without the Pulp Fiction reference.
It's hard without Dan.
So, Isaac, how about you? When did you first see this episode?
Well, my origin story with Trek is actually a interactive board game that came out with TNG. I think it was the guy that played Gowron as not Gowron.
Oh, you mean the VHS game?
Yes, that's right.
I've seen clips from it. Yeah.
So you play this board game, and every once in a while, the guy that plays Gowron,
Robert O'Reilly,
reasons he has another name. He goes, right, you, the one with the dice, you have to do this. And then you go on and play the game. So essentially he's stolen the Enterprise and you've got to get it back. But I just really enjoyed it. And then from that I found TNG, and Voyager launched shortly after. Mm. And that was, they gave that a good network treatment here for the first five episodes, and really enjoyed that, and kind of just went from everything back from there. I've watched TOS, I think I found TOS more during the COVID period, so I've watched it all once. What I've probably found from it and watching things out of order is I believe the attraction to TOS is purely the characters. It's not the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why the reboot movie, particularly the first one, was as successful as they were very true to those original characteristics of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that those things are more iconic for Star Trek fans than the actual stories themselves, is more the characters and relationships. And you can see that when you know the other franchises, that you can go, oh, that's the Kirk archetype that this guy's like yeah. You know, Data is Spock. You know, you can tell all the way through that there's characters that are kind of influenced by what you get from TOS in particular, I think. And that's why they've been quite successful along the way.
Yeah, and the TOS writers were just, I don't know, it's a different style that's very formulaic in some ways, but not in a negative way necessarily, just sort of like a work a day where we're pumping out a TV script and here's just exactly what you need right. to tell whatever this goofy story.
That was how they did TV back then. Yeah. And it was writers that maybe wrote in other mediums as well. Maybe they were like short story writers mm-hmm. or novelists or whatever.
Radio authors, programs.
Yeah. Radio.
And I'll push back a little bit in the spirit of Dan, Isaac. I'm going to argue with you just a little bit because
we're dangerous.
I think some of the stories here are like very formative for all of Star Trek, right? Like they have such solid beats that they keep going back to them in other series.
Yeah.
I hear you. And I would agree that like on the whole, the number of quality stories is probably not super consistent, especially through all three seasons, but like, this setup is basically the exact setup for Captain's Holiday in TNG. Mm. Like, oh, hey, Captain, there's a crew member who won't take his prescribed vacation. Yeah, and yeah. Here, you know, what do we do?
Right.
And Data's like, well, I don't need vacation. I don't need sleep. You know, it's very Spock-like, like you were saying. And then even the doctor has to be like, I am going to force you to do this. Yeah. And it's, I mean, all of the pieces, you're completely right, Isaac, that the character archetypes are what matters most here. Mm. But I think for me, that's what I like about my favorite parts of new Star Trek is that they have nailed character archetypes and they go, okay, let's put that character in this kind of mm-hmm. story. In my opinion, TOS does it better than almost any other sci-fi franchise.
Yeah. Like, I agree.
There's so many episodes that people point to that are like, this is an all-timer. And it's like, you have a lot of those in only, what, like 79 episodes?
Yeah.
That's a lot of all-timers.
Precisely. And I think that, obviously a very debatable and largely subjective point I'm making. But for me, I'd say Lower Decks actually gets pretty close in terms of the
yes.
hyper-efficient characterization where there was character growth, but still within very specific confines, sort of particular mm-hmm. archetypes. More modern archetypes, I think more sophisticated yep. Archetypes than you saw, generally speaking, on TOS. But I thought it did a really good job of doing that. Strange New Worlds also, I think, does an extremely good job with keeping the characters behaving like and reacting like you expect they would. And in this episode in Shore Leave with TOS, again, this is an early, it's a season one, it's episode 15, I forget which order it was in
something
the production
like
order, but you know what all these characters are like by the way they are acting through this episode. We're learning a little bit about them, but it's also nothing surprising, right?
I liked, just going back a point, I loved Jesse arguing as Dan and then saying things that I made a good point. That was the bits that I held on to in the debate we were having. I think what's different here in TOS compared to TNG and after is you learn the lesson and you close off the episode. Mm. Whereas
and everyone laughs.
The
They're all like, ha, ha, ha.
Yeah, and they play that music. The funny, like,
even the lesson here was, it's a dangerous planet. Let's bring everybody down.
Yeah.
But that's how they ended it. Whereas it shouldn't have right. been, okay, let's all just go now.
Let's not
come back.
Let's stay away. Yeah.
It was clumsy. Yeah. I would say it was clumsy at the end because really, I think the essence, like the after school special level, here's what I learned today is, yes, the more complex the mind, the greater the need for play. But then they immediately are like, here's McCoy with two cabana girls. And like, yeah, let that sink in for like 1 minute. And Patrick, my one thing about what you were saying is that I forgot kind of how different McCoy feels in this episode than how he usually does.
Horny McCoy.
Yeah.
He's super horny McCoy.
Randy Hands.
I think I just don't like horny McCoy.
Well,
like, I want him sour and bitter. And
I kind of like horny McCoy. What I think is important to point out, since you brought it up, is that scene with the two girls that he's remembering from Rigel 2, the cabaret. He is straight up saying that he had a three-way with these two women. Like, that's what he's saying, because he didn't go to a cabaret that has two showgirls, right? That's not what happened.
Right.
Like, he's saying these specific two showgirls, and then he goes dot, 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 ellipses, and that's 1960s, you know.
Where would I stay?
Yeah, the boobs. They like the boobs. The boys and the boys and the girls, they all love the boobs. The cabaret girls from Rigel right. 2. Don't go to Rigel 3.
It's the 60s.
But you know he's what I'm saying? Like,
don't go to Rigel.
He just
4.
Said he had three-way on 1960s TV, and that's the message. That's the only conclusion to be made from that. It's subtle, but that's the only conclusion.
Yeah. Well, and it's also like he did that because he was no longer in the same immediate vicinity as Barrows.
Yeah,
like,
as human Barrows.
Okay, well, if I can't make this fantasy work, I'll try another fantasy. And that's like very clearly encouraged by the episode, right? Like, just go for it. It's fine.
There's also...
See, I noticed all that, but I was more...
It's a special...
But where's the rabbit?
Yes, I know. That's right. Where did the rabbit go? It's because they couldn't afford to rent the suit for more than 2 hours from the Disney lot.
But there's a tiger.
Yeah, they have a whole tiger.
An actual friggin' tiger.
They have an actual tiger where clearly at some point it had a chain. It was like tied down, but they're like, that tiger's there. But the other thing you can extrapolate from the McCoy conversation or the McCoy situation with those two cabaret girls, since we're talking about horny McCoy, and there's other horny McCoy scenes in this episode too, but that end scene, not only do we know that he's basically admitted to having a three-way, more power to him, that's great. but there's also a bit, you could, and maybe this is a bit of a stretch, and I would understand if people thought so, but because he conjured those images while he was getting fixed up, right? You got to wonder if there's some connection there between like surgery or tortured up. Or what exactly was he experiencing that made him conjure this memory in the first place? It's or like, no, is it just that McCoy is just so horny all the time that that's just McCoy?
Right. What was it about his hands that Dax remembered?
Yeah, and in Trials and Tribulations.
Surgeon's fingers.
Yes, the surgeon's fingers. Oh, but if you'll recall, for those who have seen it, the sequel to this episode in the animated series where they go
discuss that
they go back we talked about that one on years
McCoy
like literally
gets a little,
years ago
a little strange another way
in that one McCoy fantasizes having a plantation and he's like, this is great, I have a plantation. It's like, what,
the 70s?
So I would take horny McCoy over plantation McCoy. Generally speaking,
I mean, yeah, if those are the two options, I agree with you completely.
It's a little better.
He kind of started off the episode drunk. Like, it seemed like he was drunk immediately.
He did a little bit.
He sees this rabbit, and then he's like, well, that was really strange, but doesn't say anything. And then he sees Alice.
And he's like, what?
Waits until she has run away, and then he stares, and then he goes, Sulu!
Sulu!
You've horrible reaction time, man. Like,
I've got a little theory about all that. So... very late in the episode, we meet the caretaker of the planet, right? Mm-hmm.
Not the caretaker from The Caretaker. from Voyager.
Annoyingly similar.
That's where I'm actually going with it. Ah. So in my canon now, we've got three caretakers.
Okay.
One of them, of which is a little girl called Suspiria.
Ah, yes.
Suspiria may be Alice.
Ah, oh, you know what? Yeah. That's weirdly apt. That could actually work.
So the other thing that I was thinking is that people always, and I mean, Lower Decks did it explicitly, but a lot of people draw the connections between Q and Trelane.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
But this language from the caretaker is exactly Q language. Like, oh, your species isn't quite ready to understand us, so I'm not going to explain anything. But, you know, we pretty much deal in magic. Don't worry about it. Like,
I like that as a literary tool to say, oh, yeah, just it's the end of the episode. Yeah.
Right.
don't stress about it. It's special technology.
Just go with it.
This is sci-fi, right?
Yeah. Voyager's caretaker might have been that fun before he was old and a rock. Like, we don't know what young, jovial caretaker looks like.
Yeah, or how old he is.
Maybe that's the guy.
He could be an Ocampa, and he's just like 8 years old or something. He's not very good at his job because he hasn't been around it a lot. I mean, that was always a bit of a problem I had with the Ocampa lifespan thing. I respect it as a sci-fi idea. Granted, it was not particularly well examined, I think, in Voyager. But part of it is like, I mean...
How do they know how to do anything?
Yeah, how do they know how to do anything? If they live so short. I can buy it in sci-fi terms.
I guess there's been a whole lot of them or something.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't
know. Not to mention the troublesome of Neelix dating a 2-year-old.
Yeah, oh yeah. Every time we talk about Voyager, it seems to come up, even when Kes isn't there. We're just like, oh yeah,
it's
you remember?
Funny because Voyager is notorious for kind of throwing the character archetype out the window just to make an episode work.
Exactly, yeah.
But Neelix, very consistent, always creepy. Consistently creepy.
Always
never likable. Like,
it's like, why do they let this guy hang around? Why do they keep him on the ship? It's crazy. Like
you don't really need a cook.
Yeah.
As soon as they kicked him off, they got home.
That's a good point. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's very true. Yeah. So one question I had, you know, just starting at the beginning of the episode, we talked about McCoy's reaction to the hilarious, not only the hilarious suit, man in suit, rabbit, but that he was like, oh my, oh dear, I'm late for a meeting or whatever he was saying.
Was that you, Patrick, or was that the audio from the episode? I was wondering if Dan was here.
Well, there was a few things because there was also like that goofy style, like, yee-hee-hee-hee-hee, like later in the episode. So some really silly sound effects and choices along the way. But the other thing that was interesting was this whole, like, there's no animals, there's no people, no worries. Is that an Australian term, by the way? No animals, no people, no worries. Because Sulu says that. And I was
Mate,
like,
it is so scary here with the amount of animals.
No. Yes, I know. Is that I was like, yeah, exactly. But it was an interesting thing, the point they kept pointing, but there's like, no animals here. It's great. There's no fucking animals. I was like, I don't know. I kind of like animals.
Don't you need animals to make some plants?
Sure, but I would be weirded out if I was like, oh, this is a vacation place, but there's no animals.
I would totally be weirded.
I'd be happy if they were like, there's no mean animals or poisonous
predators,
or something.
Toxins,
like if it was all hamsters or cuddly something or others.
Yeah, birds.
But to Jesse's point, they also specifically say no insects.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, then you should already be suspicious about all of this plant life.
Yeah, how are they pollinating?
And then later on...
Yeah, I've seen the bee movie.
And I only noticed it because they said that, but later on, behind Ruth, there's very clearly a buzzing fly for like 2 or 3 shots. And I'm like,
oh, I didn't see that.
I wouldn't care if you did not say out loud, no insects. Like, why give yourself a restriction like that?
Well,
like, sure, do no plants, no or no people, no animals, fine. But insects? You can't control that. Why would you do that?
I've got an answer. We all know McCoy and what he's normally like, right? Wouldn't he just really fantasize about being annoyed by a mosquito?
Oh, that's actually true.
that's a good point.
Or just turn up on the planet.
Nobody imagined some bugs. Because I could imagine it being hard to not imagine a bug in that kind of outdoor environment. Yeah.
McCoy is from Georgia, right?
Yeah, he's from Georgia. He should be covered in
the mosquitoes in Georgia are, you can see their faces. They're large. They're like sort of like shrimp with legs.
He's not joking. It's horrifying.
And it's no joke. And then there's like gnats that bite you.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a whole thing. So he probably, it was no thing.
Yeah. I mean, he just didn't even bother. Yeah. Although when he imagines his plantation, I bet he imagines some bugs along with it. Because it's part of the vibe. You know, the sound, like that, the cicada sound.
McCoy does get a little too Southern sometimes when his mind is being altered. I know there's an episode where I think like some plants shoot like spores in the crew's face.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah.
He turns around and he's like, Jimmy boy, come on down. He's like... immediately very uncomfortable.
Well, speaking about sounds, right? I mean, it is a shame that Dan couldn't cover this episode because there are a lot of crazy sounds in this episode, and there's a lot of sort of
Chief O'Brien.
There's a lot of like weird sounds and grunting. The crew is grunting a bunch, so I'm sure he would have gotten a lot out of it. You know,
that and the Yeoman Barrows is in danger sounds are like just rife for clipping. Dan, maybe you should go back and cover this episode on your own as a companion piece to this. I think that would work.
I would.
It's Got Dan.
Yeah, hugely love an episode or a whole series of It's Got Dan's. That would be fantastic.
I would listen to that.
Yes, I would very much listen to that. But yeah, getting back to the beginning bit, I do enjoy, and again, I think this is that style of writing back then is just very straight and to the point, where they convey that Kirk is all burnt out because he's got all these like aches and pains and he can't like quite remember the date for the log. It's very sort of obvious stuff, but it also kind of works. You're like, oh man, Kirk is all fucked up. He does need a break. And then it sets up all that stuff later, like that great gag with Spock tricking Kirk, which I always love, like examples of characters tricking other characters. And I think, Jesse, you were mentioning it earlier, but that scene was really cool. But yeah, I enjoyed how quickly we got what we needed to know about this story. It's just like boom, 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 a little bit of dialogue, a little bit of exposition, and then McCoy being all like, thinking he was he thought he had gone crazy, right? And then we go to the credits. It comes back from the credits, and McCoy is calmed down, but he's all like, yeah, so Captain, here's the deal. Like, either our robots are broken, or I'm fucking nuts.
Okay, like, he goes on all these space adventures, but he sees, like, Alice in Wonderland and a rabbit, and he thinks he's gone crazy. Like, come on.
Well, that makes sense to me, actually, because if you're seeing some sort of slime monster, it's like, okay, ooh, that's an alien slime monster. But yeah, if you're just seeing... Right. And how did the girl pronounce? She was like Westcote. Was that a British girl? I wasn't able to look it up if the actor was British or not, because I couldn't tell if it was an American girl doing a not great British accent or a British girl that maybe wasn't quite well trained in acting yet. I'm not sure, but the girl was a little off putting.
Assuming McCoy conjured her, maybe she's from Rigel too as well.
Ah, or
Georgia.
Or Georgia. Maybe she's she's at the local playhouse in Georgia.
Yeah.
What about though? So Kirk feels like McCoy's tricking him down to the planet to investigate this large rabbit.
Yeah.
Kirk seems to accept that it's true very quickly without any real evidence.
That's true.
But it's also like it's on McCoy. It's entirely McCoy's fault, because when he gets there, he's like, oh, rabbit tracks, that's weird. And McCoy's like, yeah, let's bring everyone else down. It's possible that I just had multiple coherent hallucinations, yeah, like really quick succession, but let's bring everyone down. It's probably fine. Like, he's actively not a very good doctor in this episode.
Yeah. Also,
I actually wrote down Doc Player as my note for him.
But the rabbit
the
tracks didn't look
of the tracks.
They didn't look
the
like rabbits.
Of the tracks implied that the rabbit was jumping
like
or hopping.
Monster,
yeah,
but the rabbit we saw was walking.
Yeah, first of all, he was walking. Second
like
of all,
bear.
Yeah, they looked like or some alien. It looked like a Gorn or something, right? Like lizard.
Yeah, it was
lizard
like,
feet.
They
or
went
something
to the same place as the Gorn.
I thought
very
that
inconsistent.
Yeah, I thought it was the Gorn scenery.
Same
yeah,
like rock formation.
Is it the Vasquez Rocks
yeah,
where they film at?
Yeah,
that
what that, yeah.
I do think. Oh, we got to go to on a break in a second, but I do think that this was a really well filmed episode. It really took advantage of the on-location shooting, and we got to see mountain vistas and deserts and of course, you know, mixed in with some sets and stuff like that, but the outside stuff, I thought
the stuff with like the all the trees
and and to think that they knew it was going to be on some shitty ass TV, three quarters of them black and white when it was first on, and but we're watching it on like a giant HD TV and it looks beautiful. It's amazing that they put in the effort when they really didn't need to, and you see on a lot of those other shows they didn't put in the effort all the time.
The thing that really impressed me about it, in addition to everything you've just mentioned, is the sound mix. Like, there are episodes even in this same season where they're on a soundstage or they're outside for like two scenes, and you can hear that the actors are like trying to yell their lines to make sure that the mics pick them up and it sounds hollow. This was great. I don't know if they actually like ADR'd any of it, but it sounds really good.
I agree.
Very, very impressed.
And I hadn't even really considered comparing it to others, but you're right. I can think of other episodes where it's noticeable. It's almost the sound version of when you're watching an animation and you can tell which of the doors is about to open because it looks different. You know, there's some tonal quality that's different to the sound in a lot of episodes, and that wasn't here. It didn't take me out of the episode. Good observation. Well, how about this? Let's take a break, and when we get back, we will continue our discussion of Shore Leave, sans Dan's sound effects.
Sans Dan.
Be right back.
This is where he'd play a sound effect. Poopy, poopy.
And we're back.
It's a rather extensive
break. We're dangerous.
Break.
We're dangerous.
I'm not jokingly.
B'Elanna's on it.
B'Elanna's on
Isaac,
it.
Isaac, how about you've gotten really good at the holograms.
Where would I stay?
Could you give us a hologram?
Oh, yeah. All right. Which one's your favorite?
I like the sad one.
I like the sad one the best too. It was like
hologram.
I like the one that feels like it's got a question mark on it. The
holograms?
Holograms?
That's my favorite, too.
Isn't it? We all have different favorites. That's fun. I wonder what Dan's favorite is. Holograms? I love new listeners are going to be like, what the fuck are they talking about?
But it's really funny.
Who is this Dan?
What I really like is when Dan finds a new one, he's like, that's going in the best of. We're going to use that. And then you never hear it again.
I know. It happens all the time.
The one that I think that he stuck to it with was, oh, this human is full of words.
Yes. Yeah. Now, that's a great one.
Back.
I love it.
But the rest of them, it's like, I don't think I've heard that one again.
I don't think I haven't noticed that he basically only plays that for me. when I'm talking way too much.
It's like, from an outside perspective, it really is the secret sauce. Like, it works because of the contentious nature of the setup. And like, anybody can tell, like, it's there because you guys really do know each other well, and you know how to press those buttons.
Especially,
you know,
Jesse.
I know he's we're got on. It's got Star Trek, but It's Got Star Trek is a great podcast.
I know. I do highly recommend it to all of our listeners. We recommend It's Got Star Trek. You got to give it a try.
It's well,
don't turn it off now. Yeah.
Listen to the end. Oh, speaking of what's coming next, as we continue our discussion of Shore Leave, Isaac, you have a game. Yes.
I do have a game.
You have a game. Now, we have a theme song for your game. Should we try to play the theme song?
Let's do it. Yeah.
All right, we're going to play this theme song. We drained our Patreon account.
Oh, no.
To hire some local artisan musicians to produce this theme song for us. Now they didn't listen because I asked for a short a short theme song to explain Isaac's game, right? Simple as that.
Oh, no.
This is too long. This opening part could have been shorter.
Freaking Isaac's got a plan so sly. A new one's game beneath the Irish sky. Cards on the table, dice in the air. What's the end for? Don't you dare. S-I-N-I-G-A-N. It's a riddle wrapped in whiskey again. Your chance to the Jake while he's standing around. Freaking Isaac's game's the talk of the town.
A shamrock in his pocket.
A pint in his hand, a wink in his grin. What's the end for? Let the mystery begin. S-I-N-I-G-A-N. It's a riddle wrapped in whiskey again. Dance to the Jake while he's standing around. Freaking Isaac's game's the talk of the town.
Who are these local people that wrote this song?
I don't know that you want to know these people.
I don't think I do.
Because I explicitly asked them, please make sure that this song is free of any Irish stereotypes.
You know, didn't we sort of talk about parts of this episode when we talked about, there was another episode of It's Got Star Trek where we talked about sort of Irish stereotypes in Star Trek?
Well, I think we've mentioned it on multiple occasions.
And we touched on this character of Finnegan.
Yes, and it's not just us. This is, I think, well known across the fandom is that Star Trek has this weird and persistent, to this day, by the way, some of modern Star Trek has gone into this direction a little bit too, where it's like, yeah, let's just talk about them dancing a jig and have a four-leaf clover.
Right, he's got his fists up.
He's got his fists up. He has a pint in his hand. He's drinking whiskey because he's Finnegan.
He says, Jimmy, my boy.
And just to clarify to the audience, the reason why the song kept saying, talking about, like, what does the N stand for? We don't know. That's because, Isaac told me what this game stood. I mean, Isaac will explain it in a second. This is an anagram. Finnegan is an anagram that will explain the game that he's about to present to us. So go ahead, Isaac.
Well, given the time we had allocated for the game, I hope you all really enjoyed it. Yeah, thanks for playing. That song was longer than Hey Jude.
It's got
anyway.
It kept going. I faded it out too. That was like 2 minutes long.
Oh, man.
I was like, give it, I want 30 seconds, damn it. But these artisanal folks, you know what they do. They just, they're just like, no, I gotta have a long jig breakdown.
False church.
Musicians never listen.
Yeah, in between stereotypes.
I know this is an audio podcast, but do those Irish people, are they just going to stay in this chat for the... for the remainder of the show quietly? Or
yes,
are they going
that's right.
To be...
Yeah, that was a live presentation. We just muted them.
I hope they keep quiet.
They're shaking their shillelaghs at us.
put mutes on their fiddles.
They've got one of them's got a basket of potatoes. He's going to start hurling at us because we're being mean.
Oh, my goodness.
No. Yeah, Star Trek, of course, has this weird thing that occasionally comes up where they use really overt Irish stereotypes. I know this was the 1960s, and this was meant to be a comedic episode. Like, that this Finnegan guy was...
Is that just what, like, comedy was back then? It was like...
I don't know.
Have some Irish stereotypes.
It was pretty intense. But
well, this episode had more than just Irish stereotypes.
Yes. Totally.
We'll stick with those for now.
Yeah, we'll get to some of the other stereotypes later. Yeah. But yeah, Isaac, so how does this work?
So this game's called Freakin' Isaac's Nuanced Irish Game and an N for some reason, or Finnegan for short. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you five questions. You're going to compare two things and you're going to give me what's more annoying. Mm-hmm. Because Finnegan to Kirk was very annoying.
Yes.
He was so upset that he was in this episode. So I've come up with, like, it's going to be Finnegan or something else. I have the correct answers, and I will be keeping tally. So you're not going to be swaying me with your opinions.
All right.
You have to decide what would have Isaac picked as the more annoying thing out of these things, right? Does that make sense, or do we just want to play?
I think
I like
that makes
sense.
It's
a subjective game show.
Let's roll.
Yeah, me too.
So there are no prizes, and I also don't have a tiebreaker questions.
Ooh, excellent.
Okay, question one. From the perspective of people on Voyager, what's more annoying, Neelix or Finnegan?
Neelix.
You can all have a shot.
I've got to go to Neelix.
For me, Neelix it's is Neelix. Persistent.
But from the Voyager people, because they're used to Neelix.
Right. And some of them
some people even like that guy.
Yeah. Although, doesn't Janeway like an Irish fellow? I don't know. Maybe this guy's a little too high energy.
That. Yeah, we talked about that.
Delete the wife.
Right. I'm gonna hologram?
I'm going to lock in Neelix.
So that's three Neelixes?
Three Neelixes.
Mm. You all have 1 point. Well done.
Excellent.
The second question. Is Wesley more annoying to Geordi, or is Finnegan more annoying to Kirk?
Oh.
I feel like Geordi was mostly annoyed by Wes in like a couple of episodes. It wasn't super consistent. So I'm going to go with Finnegan on this one.
Yeah, I sort of feel that way. It's, you know, he wasn't really that annoyed with Wes. Maybe it was a bit of an act just because, you know, Wes is a precocious fellow.
Wes is precocious, and I probably would lean in that direction, but maybe just to play devil's advocate. Wes may have been more annoying in the sort of traditional definition of annoying to Geordi, because in the case of Kirk and Finnegan, I think there appeared to be at least some degree of, I don't know if homoerotic is the right word, but there's some sort of brotherly playfulness to them, where Kirk was legitimately annoyed, but in part because he wanted deep down to impress Finnegan.
Well,
the
it's the version of Finnegan that's in Kirk's brain. That's what really it is.
That too.
Right.
Like, it's a certain kind of Finnegan that's especially annoying because you're imagining.
And if it's a particularly annoying self-created conjuring, as you pointed out, then in that case, it's a masochistic annoyance, mm-hmm. which I think is a little bit different. The nuanced difference from your regular old being aggravated by this perky young lad who's playing around in the engineering section.
So, Patrick, I'm going to need a final answer.
Wesley and Geordi. Well, yeah, that's
Wesley and Geordi is your answer. Yeah, so, unfortunately, Patrick, you've got that one wrong. The Jessies have that one right. Finnegan is the more annoying in that one.
Ah, both the Jessies.
Question three. From my perspective, who is more annoying, Rom or Finnegan?
Oh, you know what? Oh.
Do you not love Rom? I mean, I guess that's not the answer, right? So I can't. Yeah, I love Rom, so I'll happily get this question wrong on principle. He loves baseball. He loves Lita. He's just a good guy.
He loves Moogie.
No.
Moogie.
I'm going to burn it all to the ground.
I'll say Rom. You know, I'll take the bait, and I'll say I'll say Rom in the interest of trying to catch up on points here. Jesse, what do you think? Other Jesse or here Jesse? IGST Jesse.
Yeah, I'll say Rom.
The answer is Rom. So OGIGST Jesse is on three. Three out of three. We've got two more. Does Kirk find Finnegan more annoying than Picard finds Q annoying?
Oh, that's
well. Here's that homoeroticism that Patrick was talking about.
Yeah,
I think it's present in both relationships. Here.
I agree. Although the directionality might be different.
Yeah.
And Picard, sometimes he's annoyed by Q, but often he's aggravated by Q.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's a sufficient difference in degree between those two.
Picard's
adjectives.
Not the kind of guy that's going to like just start fighting you. That's the whole.
He just he gets exasperated.
Kirk and like you know
and he tugs his shirt down. He's like,
yeah.
Right.
Unless you're a Norsican.
I think Picard understands the value of Q and appreciates what Q is trying to do, even if he doesn't like the methods.
He's still willing to play the game.
Right. This one, I think I'm going to say Finnegan is more annoying to Kirk than Q is to Picard.
Other answers?
I'll say Q is to Picard just because, I don't know, we saw more of that. I don't know. It was a longer period of interactions.
A life.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. That's a good point.
Jesse?
I think the Finnegan guy is more annoying to Kirk just sort of in the immediate sense. And because he's a cunt, he's the constructive.
Because he's a cunt?
No, he's a constructive. He's a construct. He's the Finnegan of Kirk's mind. He's especially annoying.
That because Isaac is here. You're like,
he's a cunt.
I didn't say that.
I'm doing great.
What blue humor, Jesse? You can say it if we have somebody from the Commonwealth on, I think. You know?
Word, yeah.
That's right. I think it's in our national anthem somewhere. Yeah.
We exchange it. We're allowed to say.
We can't say.
We can't say. We got to start. I'll bleep that out. Yeah. I'll bleep that out. We trade cunt for.
Yeah, right. All right. So here you say that to someone you like, but if you call someone mate,
right,
then they're probably not. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, I've done something wrong. So the answer was actually Q is more annoying, and I took annoying to be aggravated. Mm. Like, not now, Q! Yeah. You know, that's I'm annoyed, you know? So that's why
question,
I went there.
Game Master, if Picard were to visit the Shoreleaf planet, are you saying that Q would appear because that's what Picard would be thinking about?
I think Fesh would appear twice, and that would be because
just like in TNG,
Picard liked Fesh, and Patrick Stewart liked Fesh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think you're right.
So the final question: what's more annoying to Dan, Finnegan, or Jesse and Patrick interacting when he's making a long point?
Well, I would probably have to say Jesse and Patrick.
Yeah, I'm going
to
say that too.
Probably would be more annoying.
Because we know how to annoy him.
More acutely annoying to Dan, I think.
Yeah. And I wasn't keeping close track of the points, so I'm going to agree with Patrick and Jesse in an attempt to create a three-way tie.
He might be annoyed by Finnegan sort of in the abstract.
Yeah.
So open point, Jesse, what's your answer, sorry?
Patrick and Jesse are more annoying. Yep.
So you three are all correct. So the final scoreboard has Jesse from It's Got Star Trek on 4, Patrick on 4, and special guest Jesse on 3.
Oh.
I hope you enjoyed playing Isaac's nuanced Irish gaming game and an N for some reason. Take it away with the whole music.
Get another potato. Sure, you don't have any whiskey behind there.
Freaking Isaac's got a plan so sly. A nuanced game beneath the Irish sky. Cards on the table, dice in the air. What's the end for? Don't you dare. Finnegan, it's a riddle wrapped in whiskey again. Dance to the jig while you're standing around. Freaking Isaac's game's the talk of the town.
All right, all right.
Freaking Isaac.
Freaking Isaac's game is, it will indeed be, I predict.
The talk of the town.
That it will indeed be the talk of the town once this episode goes live on the internet.
Word.
Thank you, Isaac. That was a super fun game. And we we enjoyed the theme song. That was a strange business, but we do appreciate those local artisans putting that stereotypical song together for us. Okay.
Thanks, Patrick. And I'd just like to say, I really thank you guys for not arguing with what I had. Like, you guys were very respectful of, yeah, okay, that's the answer. When you could have actually really fought me pretty hard on that. Yeah. And I'd like to double down. We did really well not mentioning Finnegan up until that point as well. Like,
yeah.
We could have, yeah. That could have been everything in the
we
first
should have
half.
Been blasting that out at the beginning.
Yeah.
Kirk thinks he is a sociopath. Like, he has this maniacal laughter. Yeah. There's actual leprechaun music. He, like, semi-fondly is recalling some physical assault. And the laugh, it's just, the whole combination makes the Finnegan character so unsettling. Like, he's
willing
really
to, like, pursue
creepy.
Him across this landscape.
Yeah. And by the way, they're physically, he's physically assaulting
and
Kirk.
Yeah.
Kirk was talking about pranks, and he's like, just kicking the shit out of Kirk.
They're wearing each other out. Yeah. Like, they're wearing each other's asses out.
This behavior presumably would not have been acceptable at Starfleet Academy.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
totally.
One would presume there would be some demerits or some points taken away from Gryffindor or whatever. I don't know how it works and how they punish people.
Who's that Gardner? That Gardner guy comes out and says, you did a bad job.
Or Boothby?
Boothby, yeah.
He's probably friends with
your hair.
Oh, yeah. He's probably related to Locarno, actually. Yeah, right. But it sounds like the Academy in Kirk's day was a strangely... like antique building, because he's like, oh yeah, he'd leave a bucket on a half open door. I'm like, you guys already have
they have doors,
magic doors.
Like, you know, I never even considered that.
You're
right.
What the hell?
Yeah, it wouldn't work on the Enterprise.
Oh man, yeah, that whole Finnegan business is funny because we understand what they're doing character wise. It's like, okay, yeah, Kirk dealing with something from his past, relating to his masculinity, whatever. But yeah, it does really go into the campy side of things, which is fun. It becomes unbelievable. It might be more interesting if it was more believable. The Ruth stuff was more believable in a sense, even though they didn't really get into the ethical weirdness of Kirk being like deciding at the end, I guess it was totally okay to go hang out with the simulacrum of his ex-girlfriend, presumably.
Especially with the note that Finnegan, the most implausible part about Finnegan is that he goes, I'm still 20 years old. And it's like, this actor is clearly like 36.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
I don't know about that. But it implies that Ruth is also whatever age she was when Kirk first met her. And he even says, like, you haven't aged a day. Yeah. It's like, again, yeah, this is one of those, this was written in the 60s things, and you kind of just accept that it was that way.
Yeah.
The Finnegan guy is still living. Most of the other extras in this episode are deceased.
Oh, that's right. What, do you remember his name? I can't
it's
remember.
Something weird, because he became some sort of weird, like, sort of monk, sort of.
What?
A weird mystical fellow.
All right, you
this
would.
Is what did
Bruce
it.
Mars.
Is that his current name or his original name?
His current name is Brother Paramanada.
What? That's amazing.
He is a monk of the Self Realization Fellowship in Los Angeles.
Yeah, because Bruce Mars was already like a crazy name to begin with.
I know, Bruce Mars.
Hey, I'm Bruce Mars. Watch out. I want to kick
Bruce
William
Mars
Jenner's
did Uptown
ass.
Funk, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. this guy's about 90 years old.
Is he still a minister? And what was the church he was in?
The Self Realization Fellowship.
Oh.
He's a monk.
Actually, just the title is sort of convincing. I'll join.
Yeah.
Self Realization. That sounds real positive.
It's like a Hollywood religion.
Hollywood.
Welcome to It's Got Self-Realization.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, okay, so the whole plot of this episode centers around this people wanting to go on shore leave. They've had a hard time. There are a few peculiar things.
The actor that plays Ruth is also still alive.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. Well, she was fairly young in this episode.
Yeah, she really was 20.
Yeah.
But we have the whole thing with Spock talking about how, like, Vulcans don't relax by prancing about in grass fields or something, and it just sounded like real.
They don't have grass on their planet.
Well, that's a good point.
It's a planet with nothing.
Like, what are you doing to chill out? Like, I get it. I guess you sit and think about stuff or play the weird lute. I don't know.
Well, but you know it's true because Vulcans never lie.
Yeah, that's
right. I'm here for you, Dan.
it's just this whole Vulcan relaxation thing. And the other thing that was confusing at the beginning, where they were all like, okay, beam down on the starboard section. I don't know. Is that like a normal thing? Maybe in the Navy it is. It just, It seemed like a weird way to just like, okay, that half of the ship. I don't maybe that makes sense organizationally.
Maybe for this that one half, the ship would tilt.
Yeah, exactly. It would fall over.
Well, yeah.
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 That's probably why Jellicoe wanted 4 duty shifts instead of 3.
Yeah.
More balance.
Makes shore leave a lot easier.
It's really amazing how often I think of that Jellicoe wanting to shift to 4 working shifts. I don't know why. I don't know. There's something about that.
Seems more efficient.
And I'm not talking about as an adult. I think like since I was a child, like every now and then, it's not an uncommon thing to be like, you know, I wonder what would be better, 3 or 4, I suppose, you know, and start working the permutations in
It works with the clock.
It does divide evenly.
You can divide it into quarters.
Yeah. It depends on how long the shifts are. If it's 6-hour shifts, yeah, let's move to 4 rotations. Yeah. That's great. Mm-hmm. Then I'm working 2 fewer hours in a day, and I'm still getting all the same amount of stuff done. Yeah.
That's also only if you've got 1 duty shift a day.
Holodeck and replicate.
Yeah, if you have 2 duty shifts a day, that could be a problem.
Duty or no.
Or if they overlap, you know, you could have overlapping. Anyway, I don't know.
Duty or no duty.
Yeah, I know.
I don't think there are any of those.
Yeah, I don't think there were any.
There
duty
was
or
a
no
that's
duties.
An order.
There were 2 that's in orders.
Yeah.
Do you remember? Can you? Can anybody remember? I know because I wrote it down. But yes, and for the uninitiated listeners, Dan, a person who's not here, which if you're a new listener, you wouldn't know.
You don't know who this Dan guy is.
You'd be like, why do these people keep talking about Dan?
There's Isaac and 2 Jessies.
Is Dan okay? But Dan has a particular bugaboo about any sort of media. It doesn't have to be television, I don't think. It could be movies. It probably could be books. When they use the trope of saying, that's an order, to emphasize a point, but I know he's not here, but he could explain it better. There's particular scenarios where he's not into that. But there were 2 times this episode that the term that's an order was used. Does anybody remember either of those times?
No. All right. Did Kirk say them both?
I think he said them both.
I remember that much.
The first one was when Kirk says, that's an order, Mr. Spock, when Kirk is chasing Finnegan. So Kirk basically says Spock should go one direction to follow up on one thing. And, you know, I think somebody's screaming or whatever. And then he wants to chase Finnegan because, of course, he's got to work out his kinky whatever he was doing with Finnegan, wrestling around with him. So, yes, so that was an example of a that's an order. The question is WWDT, or what would Dan think? We all have to guess what Dan would think about this that's an order, and then Dan will let us know next week what he indeed thought.
I've totally got this. Dan wouldn't mind. He would notice it, and he would write it down, and then he would say, that's okay, because Kirk didn't say, let me die and save yourself, that's an order.
Yeah,
right.
So I think Dan would be okay with it.
See, I tend to think the opposite. I think this one was more, stop arguing with me. I'm going to go do the irrelevant thing. You go save the crew. Don't argue with me. That's what I'm doing. Yeah.
That's a good point.
But I think that self-sacrifice is the part that bugs Dan.
Yeah.
I think it was more, don't point out that I'm wrong. Just do what I've told you to do.
I'm going to go with Isaac, or at least that I think the flavor that Dan often gets aggravated by is, what's the purpose of it? Is there a nobility in the purpose? And in this case, there really isn't, because Kirk could go help Spock too and just ignore the Finnegan stuff, but he's obsessed and he's doing something that Spock probably would be like, that's illogical. We should go deal with this other thing. But I can see both sides of the argument, because I could also see Dan thinking this was a mere brief emphasis because he was jogging.
I'm going to have to tune in next week and see what Dan says.
Tune in next week.
I think the thing that really chapped Kirk's hide was that Finnegan called him a plebe.
Yeah, yeah.
The only people that have ever called me that are people who spend way too much time on the internet, which I'm saying as a podcaster. But like, I've never heard somebody say that didn't immediately get shut down for saying
All right, so we have basically 2 saying that Dan would be annoyed by this, that's an order, and 2 saying probably not. Now, the second time Kirk says that's an order, he's saying it to Rodriguez, Barrows, and I forget who the other person was, but that was when he was telling them basically to not run, like just to like all stay put.
Stand at attention.
Yeah, stand at attention, and he just says that's an order.
Oh, the other lieutenant.
Yeah. I guess I'll start here from my perspective. I think Dan's perspective on this may be that he's actually giving an order here. He's like explaining, no, I'm helping save you.
Right. So they don't think about stuff to like make the planet go funky.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So that a waiter with a platter doesn't pop up right. And ask one of the other characters, so that, is that your order?
Some kind of like UHF antenna doesn't come out and like
yeah, that's right.
Scan what yes. they're thinking.
Oh, and I
glued
I
to the
have
camera.
To talk about that antenna after we get through this, but I think I agree. I think it's that Kirk is really trying to make everyone focus and therefore be safe. So yeah. I think Dan is going to be okay with this one.
Isaac, Jesse,
I'm on board too.
You agree? Yeah,
I agree with that.
All right. Well, so we will pass that along to Dan, and he'll let us know next week. Something to look forward to in the future. In a future where there's not always that much to look forward to. In addition to Strange New Worlds, we get to hear Dan's views on this, and probably some
the,
other
the bleakness
opinions the voiced this week. All right. So yes, we do need to talk about errant antennas and all sorts of other business, and we will do so when we get back from this break.
Back from the break.
be right back. Sound effects. Nah. And we're back. Sound effects. Boodly doodly doodly. Holograms.
Where would I stay?
I don't know. Where would you stay?
Ron is on it.
A Holiday Inn. I don't know.
A hologram?
All right. So now we are back. We're in the third and final segment of the It's Got Star Trek podcast of the discussion of...
This human is full of words.
Surely. That's right.
Hey, Segamus.
Surely, indeed. Okay, so where were we? We hadn't yet gotten to the point where McCoy got piked. No, we were going to talk about the antenna. The antenna glued to the camera, which was fun. It was both goofy, but it was fun.
Well, and that's the kind of what I was going to say is like it's part of what makes the tonality of this episode so discordant. Like this is a horror movie shot, right? The POV of the thing we don't understand, and it's clearly having some kind of effect, but we're not super sure what it is, and there's ominous music. It's like, oh, this is very scary. Also, here's a jig, and you know, Kirk is loving beating this guy up. He's really enjoying it. The guy's underwear is visible more than once, which kind of like, I get it, you know.
Yeah.
It's an on-location shoot, but it's like, this is the future, man. Like, their pants would stay up. What's going on?
Why do they even have
but yeah there? The antenna was so clearly just find any antenna and put it in front of the camera. Yeah. Like it is low rent, but I think it's still effective.
Because absolutely. Yeah.
We understand immediately. Okay, there's a force acting on a crew here, and it's one of those things I was mentioning at the start of the discussion, which is like, yes, Star Trek looks cheesy. It can be very silly. But it's also really conceptually solid and very good.
It's also interesting to see the proto version of what gets refined later, as you mentioned, in horror movies. That except instead of being on a handheld camera, it's on like a big giant studio TV camera. Right. So all I can do is kind of swivel around a little bit. But you're like, okay, I still get the impact of this. It's not quite as good as you know, Evil Dead or something like that. But it's moving in that direction. The other shot that was really cool, I thought, was when they're running through the woods. And it, again, in HD, right? Like the cameraman is like running along. I don't know if it's on tracks or what, but just it was a very dynamic, unusually dynamic shot for the TV show.
Yeah, they did some running in Star Trek. Like you saw like some dudes like take off and run.
Yeah, but usually not the camera running along with them. You'd see people like run or, you know, like in the animated series when you just see the silhouettes kind of, like run
by. But there is different kinds of running in this episode. So like there's the shot where Finnegan runs away and jumps off the rock and Kirk goes, I'm going to go get him. And then follows the exact same steps and also jumps the rock. I'm like, well, you don't have to do that, man. You don't have to chase him in a straight line. And then I'm pretty sure that Angela would have completely avoided the strafing run if Rodriguez had not been pushing her while she was trying to run. Yeah. Like, That's not protection.
Kind of looked like he pushed her over. Like, remember when she like kind of fell a little bit? It was kind of like, yeah, he was like, yeah, because you tripped her, buddy.
Yeah, she would have not taken those rounds from that enemy aircraft had you just let her run.
Japanese.
Like, so weird. But you're right. Like, to have those both in the same episode where there's this gorgeous tracking shot of the physical activity is like, this is what you get from old Star Trek. The gold is absolutely there, but it's like just under a layer of styrofoam dust.
Yeah. And the mannequin guy, for example, right? So Finnegan is fake. Ruth is fake, but they're beautiful. They're gorgeous. They're lively.
Perfect facsimile.
And then the night guy is like a horrifying monster man.
Horrifying man.
And the thing is, it's not just that they're like, oh, well, I guess they didn't want to pay an actor. No, they make a point to have Kirk is like poking at his flesh and it's all like, oh, look, his flesh is all weird and creepy. It's like, but it's not weird and creepy on these other people. So why is it weird and creepy on the night? Was it McCoy who mentioned the night or was it I can't remember.
I think it's Spock exploding after the knight has been shot.
Yeah.
But it's also like he uses the word, it's like a dummy, and then they cut to it and it's clearly just a person with paint on their face.
Yes.
And you can see them breathing. It's like put a dummy in there. Like,
yeah.
You have mannequin technology in the 60s. Like,
it's very confusing.
Dummies had a bit of union. Yeah, you pay them a lot more.
Especially back then.
I know, that was back then, yeah.
Don't fuck with the dummy union.
So strange. And a lot of juxtaposition here of like, you know, supposedly the best of the breath. The best of the best.
He said the best of the breast. Because you were thinking of the ladies. There's so many
ladies.
I was
thinking of Barrows.
Of course, girls.
Roger T.
But they're doing some really dumb shit.
Yeah.
Like the one guy, he's like, he sees a tiger and it may attack him, and so he's like, oh, I should call McCoy.
Like, yeah.
No,
yeah, McCoy.
Take the phaser off your belt.
Right, everybody's got a phaser. Right, I know.
Yeah,
like
the phasers,
Starfleet, shoot the fucking tiger.
But they tried the phasers, and the phasers don't work. So, you know, it's one of those.
But this was before that happened.
But yeah, before we knew it, probably he would have pulled his phaser and it would have worked.
Yeah.
But
I still don't know. See what Colin McCoy is going to do.
Yeah. Exactly. It's like, it was like Colin. Like, and especially that it's
call
McCoy.
Captain Kirk.
Yeah, call Captain Kirk. Kirk will come and, like, fight the tiger. McCoy will just.
I think
the
1960s TV aerial stopped the phasers from working.
You think so? Only when it was close?
Yeah,
it could be. Could be. That's a reasonable interpretation of that.
I thought the aerial proved the point that the caretaker was making, that they're more advanced, because that aerial was obviously not just a TV aerial. It was a barricade of some, like, a force field. It was also used as a periscope, I thought, and it didn't look like a periscope, but they were using it to watch. So that's very futuristic technology they were using.
Yeah, periscope-ish.
And you know what? While we're talking about Barrows in her uniform, yes, it gets torn.
Mm-hmm.
But then when she puts it back on after wearing the princess dress, it is torn on the other side.
Oh, really? I didn't notice that. They're just like, you got to show both of her shoulders.
I know. You
got to have both of the shoulders in one episode. Just say it's a costume mistake. Everyone will believe that, and we'll get to see both of her shoulders.
But like Kirk's tunic was all torn in the same fashion. Like, and you still got the
To see, like exact same spot as hers
shoulders.
Was the first time. Yeah.
But his is always torn.
Yeah. It also suggests a manufacturing defect.
I know.
I think
on the right side of every uniform.
I don't want to be the kid in class who tells the teacher that they didn't assign homework like right before the end of class. I don't want to be that kid. But I don't know about this whole. I don't know if you noticed. You know, we like to be a progressive minded podcast here. But I certainly noticed in the HD that Barrow's skirt was way too short, and that there was that Starfleet tailors,
like
whatever they're doing to measure these uniforms, they are doing it incorrectly because
her legs were too long.
Yes, her rear end was very clearly bouncing outside of her skirt when she's all trotting along. To McCoy. And again, I don't want to like spoil anyone's time. I appreciated the view as much as anyone, but I was just like, really? I mean, even this is supposed to be the arrow. Like, for example, did you notice we don't see the belly buttons later? They have the belly buttons filled in because this was that era of TV where you weren't supposed to show a bare belly button on a woman.
Oh, that's
on television.
Right. Even like I Dream of Jeannie, she had like a suit.
Yeah, the way her dress was designed in I Dream of Jeannie was was to cover the belly button but show everything else. And Star Trek did that a lot. What Are Little Girls Made Of, I think maybe might be one of the ones where they create a costume that shows so much skin but technically covers the belly button and a couple other things. Right. But yeah, they really were going in this episode for the male gaze titillation type stuff.
But not only was that problematic for what you're saying, Patrick, but also the storyline itself. Like, I mean, I know it's today's standards and we're looking at 1960s, but the way to help someone that's obviously had a horrendous situation happen isn't to use that as a way to, you know, ingrain yourself in a relationship. It's
put this dress on,
checking if you're okay and what help.
And you'll have to fight me off.
The better avenue of conversation.
Yeah, it's right. McCoy is just like, I'll help you out.
Yeah,
take off your clothes.
By the way, could you wear this dress?
Yes,
you wear this dress. I'd really like to see you in it. I'll come after you.
What was that line? He had a.
He doesn't peek. He doesn't peek.
When I peek, it's for medical reasons.
That's it.
I'm not only really going to.
He didn't peek though.
He didn't change.
Yeah,
but he didn't actually. It's okay.
He was gonna peek, and then he got interrupted.
No, he peaked.
You think he still peaked?
It was
peripheral.
Like, he was more lecherous than Kirk ever was.
Oh, yeah.
One episode. It's like.
Absolutely.
He's an absolute creep.
You're right. 100%, Jesse. Just this episode alone. And there's other examples, too.
Shocking.
But this is a particularly acute. They're just
surgical,
like,
fingers.
Did you think somebody, the writer or somebody, owe DeForest Kelly a favor? Like, was there some behind the scenes where DeForest Kelly was like, here's what I want you to do. I want you to make a horny McCoy episode. And, hey, by the way, let's fucking kill him, too. That'd be hilarious.
Yeah. He'll die and he'll come back.
I prefer my Dr. McCoy to hate medicine and space travel rather than being the Dr. Player.
Make him acerbic and pissy and just like unhappy at all times. I'm here for that. But yeah,
fighting with Spock.
Here's the only thing that might make it make sense, because I was not alive in the 1960s. Would DeForest Kelly have been considered better looking than like the average person? Like, is he on this show because he's considered good looking?
He's the oldest guy on the show.
Yeah, he is.
Right.
He was in a lot of westerns.
Yeah. I've gotten the impression that McCoy is one of those people that just sort of exudes sensuality, like DeForest Kelly / McCoy. And maybe that's what they were going for. They were just like, this guy, doesn't matter what he looks like. He's just like, and wore what he dresses like. Because he would dress in the 70s, DeForest Kelly wore some crazy outfits and he looked awesome. He had some style.
Crazy jackets. Yeah,
even when he was an old man, just be lounging around, you know, hanging out with the swimming pool.
Because he was still an old man in the 70s.
Like, yeah. But
he looked
I don't
know. Pretty old in Encounter at Farpoint.
He was especially old.
But it would be a good survey to run. You know, I think it would be a good idea to kind of hear from folks across from all perspectives on what they think the vibe was at the time with McCoy, and maybe they could tell us about that if they were there, or what they think the vibe is with McCoy today. He seems to be popular, certainly popular with Dax, as Jesse referenced earlier.
Dax is the past. Never looked better than he did in TMP. Like, Disco Bones is the best Bones. Part of that.
I agree. 100%.
He's pissy and upset and angry.
He's got a gold chain. He's got a big beard and a gold chain. He's wearing some like velour, wide lapelled, crazy business. And really, that probably was just DeForest Kelly's outfit.
He's all like, right on.
Yeah.
Bones.
I love the character of McCoy. I really do. But this one episode, to me, it just felt out of character, even though I know it really isn't. Like, we've seen him hit on women before. Mm-hmm. Usually he hits on women by saying, like, hey, I know Captain Kirk. Did you know that? What? That's not an accomplishment.
Maybe the problem was more that he's happy in this episode.
Or it's somebody from his past.
I think you're right. Yeah. I think you're right.
I agree. It's another keen observation that right from the beginning, he's like, wow, this is great. What a great place. Everything's great. And it's definitely not like normally what you expect. You'd think he'd be the suspicious one saying, like, this is a little too great. Mm. Why does it seem so great? I'm suspicious because being happy is a sin.
I'm from Earth.
I mean, he wakes up each day and goes, oh, another day.
Yeah.
I know, right?
It's like the, whatever pills I took last night didn't work. I woke up again.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I'm so sad, Spock, Lee. I'm so sad.
Spock in this episode is also like a little more playful, I guess. Like he's always playful in TOS, but he clearly has a theory way before he shares what it is.
Mm-hmm. He's like, these guys are going to
I'm gonna see how this plays out.
And that when he's tricking Kirk, he did that total juke on that verbal judo on Kirk to trick Kirk into going down to the planet.
Yeah.
But he's always ride or die, right? Because he realizes, like, oh, I might be able to beam down through all this interference. I'm going to take a shot at it.
Yeah.
And it's going to be me because I think I would be the biggest help and I want to save Kirk.
Yeah.
But as soon as he gets there, he should be like, so here's my theory, because he's clearly already working on it. But he actually waits until Kirk asks for an explanation to be like, well, it seems to be this, which is, you know, that's another thing that you'll see in the rest of Star Trek Forever is like one character is going to notice what's wrong before everybody else does. And then it'll slowly, the knowledge will spread.
It's a good trope though. I mean, you don't get the naked time without that, or the naked now, which is the naked time.
Yeah. Basically redux, right? Yeah.
In general, I think people use the word trope with negative connotations and I feel like they should not.
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Right. It's a literary word.
Because they are effective.
It's a descriptor. Yeah. We've mentioned it probably more than once on this podcast where if it's used effectively, if it's utilized for the original purpose, which is to convey information efficiently by using patterns that the audience will be familiar with so you don't have to explain them in detail.
A trope.
That's why you use archetypes and other things or shortcuts so that you can get to the story. Because it's aggravating when there's too much exposition or too much explanation, and it either makes the audience feel like bored because they're like, yeah, I could figure this out, or it's just too complicated to even, you know, whatever. So Jesse's getting bored. I'm full of words. So Jesse's making funny noises.
That's an It's Got Star Trek trope, right?
Yeah. I was playing the didgeridoo. If Dan were here, Dan would like start kicking the shit out of Jesse. Then we'd have to edit it out. Every week we have to edit out.
That's what we want to hear.
But the thing is that I think TOS was pretty consistently good at using tropes well to get to the story and not do sort of like what we discussed last week on a Voyager episode, which was an enjoyable Voyager episode time and again, but just like right at the beginning is just like boom, boom, a bunch of technobabble that's just wasting time and is meaningless.
That's Voyager.
They were using the technobabble to sound like technobabble, not to actually solve the problem of how to get to the plot quicker. Like the flux capacitor is the most genius thing ever because it's like, that's what makes time travel possible. Yeah. I don't have to use any more of this movie
that's
time.
That's all you have to say.
None of it is necessary.
There's a picture of it.
It's all good, right? And that's what they're doing. That's what they do well in episodes like this, where you can just sort of like get to the story. Although the other aspect of this is funny because we talked about Horny McCoy, and it's a horny episode overall, but it is another one of those episodes that comes up every now and then in Star Trek where the women are all horny and the guys are being all nerds and like, I'm studying this plant. What are you doing? And that happens with McCoy and Barrows to a little bit. Well, I mean, McCoy, of course, immediately responds to her, but Spock is like mildly annoyed that this woman is like on his arm, but then he caresses her in a creepy way. It's very touchy. Handsy. It's a handsy episode.
Angela is the same way with Rodriguez. She's like, you know, aren't you going to take a break? Like, come on, man. We're here.
I think those people get married later in another episode.
Well, that would have been Balance of Terror, and that would have been the episode before.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
Maybe they were already married. And then this episode, although the thing is, production order is weird. And I think this, I don't know when this was produced. So I would have to look up on Memory Alpha.
Not Patrick, sure. We've talked about this. It was the 1960s.
Yes.
That's why it is the way that it is. Now, speaking of the way that it is, I could not come to an It's Got Star Trek podcast that Dan is not present for and not bring a sound clip with me. And I really, really feel deep down in my bones, McCoy, that Dan would have pulled this sound clip if he were here. Patrick, would you do me the honors?
This is definitely a mechanical contrivance.
Okay.
This is definitely a mechanical contrivance.
You couldn't ADR that? Like,
definitely.
I can't even say it. I tried so many times to say it myself, and I can't do it.
Definitely.
Do it.
I don't. Yeah, he was one of a kind.
Supposedly. What is it that Dan keeps saying secretly?
Supposedly.
Supposedly. That's the one I can't. I can't do that one. Oh my god.
A whole nother.
Yeah.
But like
holograms.
This is Spock. Okay, he's the model of precision dialogue. This is an easy fix. Is this a budget thing where they're like, that's actually the best take we got of that? Or we don't have...
This is definitely a mechanical contrivance.
Definitely.
Mechanical.
It's amazing.
A mechanical contrivance.
Yeah. It's amazing. Like, but you know what's even more amazing, though, is I didn't catch this. I agree with you 100%, Jesse, that Dan would have gotten this. Absolutely.
I noticed
that. Probably would have made a beat out of it.
It's the kind of thing your brain fixes.
Yeah. It edits it out.
Your brain edits it out.
Your brain
like,
edits
oh,
it
they
out.
They just meant to say that other thing.
I think
I've been editing
like,
it. I quite like it.
I was like, oh, there's a glitch in my stream. I'll rewind this. Oh, he actually said that. Yeah. Like, what?
Yeah, it's wild.
There were no continuity script supervisors in the 60s, I assume.
Yeah.
Tear the shirt wherever you want. Don't worry about
it. They were doing
the dialogue,
something different. Whatever.
Yeah. Or they had a different definition of continuity where it's just like, yeah, close enough. There were some great lines. You're the doctor, doctor. I don't know why I just thought that was funny.
It sounds like an airplane, right?
It does. It sounds like, yeah, it's exactly like something out of the Zucker Brothers thing. I really enjoyed Kirk's use of the term glade, because I don't think we use the term glade enough to refer to sort of, I guess,
a break in this.
It's like a break in the woods kind of thing.
Right,
he said it like 9 times.
Yeah.
I know.
So glade. I made this note when I was watching, the first time he said glade, I was like, oh, I like Kirk's use of the term glade. And then afterward, it was like, why does he keep saying glade?
Canadian glade.
So this is another thing Dan would have done, is captured every time he says glade and then made us guess how many times in the episode he actually said. We miss you, Dan.
Yeah, we do.
This episode could have been a lot better.
That's 100% right. That was good. And then there was something about Kirk. I think, was it Kirk talking about elaborate gags or whatever? Man, I don't even remember who. Bro. Normally I write down who says these quotes.
The language throughout the episode felt strangely modern to now.
Mm-hmm.
Like when he's getting the back rub, he goes, yeah, dig it in there, Mr. Spock. And it's like, that would be in TV now.
Yeah.
And he says, I don't know if this is a gag. And it's like, did they have gags? Did they know the word gag? Apparently they did.
Yeah. What sounded a little bit more archaic was when Kirk referred to... Yeah, you already talked about the anachronism of Kirk talking about Finnegan putting a bucket of water on a door, you know, because why would they have like doors like that in the future?
Right.
But same deal. A bowl of cold soup in your bed. I didn't know that was a... Is that a prank?
Like,
I mean,
it's under the covers. Like it's in a bowl.
I get. I mean,
you put the sheets over top of it.
It does. It sounds miserable. It sounds like a horrible thing to do to a person.
And then like if you're just not paying attention, you fly open your covers and you jump in the bed and oh, there's a bowl of soup in my bed.
Yeah. Cold soup.
Cold fucking soup.
And what kind of soup? Like some sort of clam chowder or something? What kind of soup is being
prepared? Like tomato soup and it like sticks to your sheets.
Is it a minestrone?
Minestrone,
gazpacho,
go gazpacho.
All of these are tomato-based soups.
Yeah,
it could be cream-based, and it would get real funky, like some kind of chowder.
Yeah, or if it
does seem like it'd be easier to just pour water on their sheets.
Yeah,
and have them find out when
and just be wet.
They lay down like.
Yeah, but there would be
your
fewer
bed's wet, motherfucker.
Well, that's what I'm saying. The type of soup matters because if it's a clam chowder, that's great. I get it. That's gross.
It gets
miserable, smelly. It's like this guy's like getting into bed and he's
gets smelly real fast.
Got a bunch of chunks of clam and
faster
and shit.
Than the tomatoes.
Yeah. But yeah, if he's talking about like a beef broth, who gives a fuck? That's great. I'd like that. It's probably good for your skin.
It'll smell nice for a couple of days.
Yeah, and then it'll not smell nice.
Finnegan's not going to make you a nice soup.
Right?
No, he's a troublemaker.
Irish bread soup,
stereotypical soup,
potato soup.
But you're right, because the way that Kirk says it, it's like, oh, everybody knows the old bowl of cold soup in the bed trick.
Yeah.
And it's like, I've never heard that anywhere.
Me neither.
Yeah, right. Is it from Ulysses or something?
Who knows? I've tried to read Ulysses a bunch of times as an English major.
Yeah, it's not so bad.
No, it's not that bad.
You didn't get to the soup in the bed bit?
I guess I didn't get to the soup in the bed bit in James Joyce's Ulysses. But like you get a few pages into Ulysses, you're like, I think I got the idea. I think I got the idea James Joyce is a piece of shit. he's a fucking literary asshole. Very clever. I get the gag. It's a good gag to be like, I'm going to be an asshole and get a bunch of other assholes to read this ridiculous shit. Anyway.
He's the kind of person that would call you a plebe.
Yeah, indeed he would. You plebe. But
it's got James Joyce.
That does bring up this whole idea. It's like we talked about it already with the Finnegan, but the Irish music, hilarious. Also offensive. I mean, definitely, it's the type of thing where there was a story about Colmeny. Early season one episode, it was like what Wishes Were Horses or whatever. I forget exactly the name.
DS9, right?
Yeah. DS9,
yeah. Colmeny, the way the episode was originally written was it was going to have a leprechaun. And Colmeny was like, if you have a fucking leprechaun on this show, I'm fucking leaving.
Oh, no.
He's like, I'm just not doing the show anymore.
Right.
And they were like, oh, shit. We didn't realize.
Maybe you have a point there.
We thought
you liked it,
Colm. We just assumed that Irish people were like a wee little leprechaun. So they switched it to, I believe they switched it to Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, that's so much better.
Yeah, it is better because Rumpelstiltskin is a scarier, much more sinister sort of lore. Leprechauns aren't. Leprechauns are tricksters. There's a bunch of other cons. There's pluricons and chloricons. Like if you look into Irish lore has all sorts of mischievous and
there's
and
so many fucking
horrific,
fairies,
horrific
so.
And evil little monsters that scuttle about that beautiful green land
That's
that
true.
For some reason the Star Trek franchise just loves to shit on up the long ladder and whatnot.
Or Scotland.
And then
Wishes Were Horses is a dumb saying anyway. If wishes were horses, then even beggars would ride. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah, I don't know what that means either.
It's like you're using the language to trick people.
Yeah, perhaps it was some sort of a non sequitur or something.
Ooh, I love that episode. That's a good one.
We talked about Ruth, and we talked about peeking in the line of duty. we didn't talk about the samurai, the samurai that jumped out and attacked Sulu, which again was like a little bit like, okay, what? You know, two steps forward, one step back kind of thing with the, we have a Japanese person, Japanese-American, playing an important role on this show.
The airplane that was strafing them was Japanese.
Yeah, and then we're going to have Japanese Zeros and a samurai just jump out of the woods and start attacking Sulu. And then, to make matters worse, Sulu's having trouble dealing with the samurai and eventually just has to get the fuck out of there. When Kirk later encounters the samurai is all like, pulls out the sword and Kirk just goes like fucking jukes him, just like
just
knocks him to the ground. Kirk's
just
like, get the fuck out of my way.
Yeah, it's like, I'm moving here, bitch.
He just shoulder rushes him. He doesn't even hit him. He just goes
right through.
It's like, I'm going this way and you're in my way.
It's wild. Mm-hmm.
Sulu is, you know, air quotes, known to be a swordsman.
Yes.
But they give him a revolver.
Yes,
and
I know.
And he doesn't even get to use it.
No, like, Kirk takes it away like a teacher. He just puts his hand out.
You're way too into this gun, Sulu. I'm taking it from you.
Yeah. And like, why
you're
does Kirk recognize
happy.
What it is on sight? Yeah.
Sulu was totally being safe with that firearm. He was shooting at appropriate targets. He was handling it safely. And Kirk was like, no.
He has the requisite knowledge.
Yeah.
Like, he knows exactly what it is. He knows where it comes from. He explained how it works.
He didn't, shoot up a school or anything.
Yeah. And they gave you, when they show the samurai, too, they give you the actual gong sound.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, that generic Far East music. It was like... Yeah. They didn't spare anybody in this episode.
Irish music, Far East music, sexy three-way music. You get all the musics. Sinister music, danger music. It was fantastic. And then when McCoy got lanced or piked or whatever the term is, where he was just like, hallucinations can't fuck with you. And he just stood there and was like, whoa, no. It was great.
Another moment of inconsistency. Which again,
tonally, it was
I'm doing it because I'm a Trekkie, but like he says, hallucinations can't hurt us, which immediately reminded me of that, Way of the Gun episode where, like, the bullets will pass through you. They cannot hurt you.
Yes.
But then he still moves her out of the way. He's like, don't worry, we're not in any danger, but stand back.
Yeah, but you stand
like,
back.
Okay, which thing is it? And then he's so surprised. Like, it's Monty Python level acting when he gets stabbed.
Yes. Ah! Yeah. It's good. And it's a similar look to when he saw the white rabbit. If you like the look when he says the white rabbit, and then when he like gets fucking stabbed through the heart, both of those are very, very similar.
He does not have good self-preservation instincts for a medical professional.
Yeah, it's wild.
I imagine he had a similar expression on Rigel too as well.
I bet he did. Okay, so I think we got to wrap things up here, but a couple of final points. One, it is important to note that at the end, you know, we talked about how they do that whole common end of Star Trek episode where they all start chuckling and laughing. Except in this case, it's got the added factor that Spock is weirded out that everyone fucked each other, because that's what happened. Like at the end of the episode, everyone's like looking at each other.
It's like, do you had a great time? Yeah, like, we had a great time.
And then Yeoman Barrows is all like, we totally had a great time. And Spock is just the look on Leonard Nimoy's voice. He really looks like, ugh. It's like, oh man. Spock is like, oh, I wish I learned how to relax the human way. So yeah, anyway, it's a fun story. It's a little handsy. It's definitely a little handsy. Definitely like 60s.
It doesn't sort of age well, as people say nowadays.
Little horny. Yeah. But the concept is fun. I agree with you, Jesse. It's a great concept and pretty well executed. A little inconsistent, but you know, par for the course for the period. I don't think most people would regret watching this, even, you know, warts and all kind of thing.
It's still a classic.
Yeah. There are some episodes where you're like, okay, I'm watching this because it's my job to watch this.
Yeah, I have to do a podcast.
It's on the cusp. I mean, this is my second time on the show, and you've given me this one and TNG's The Royale.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, do you really want me on?
The Royale, I forgot. But like, I remember going into The Royale, I remembered it being so cheesy because I hadn't seen it in a long time. And I was like, you know what? I kind of like this. It's cheesy in a good way. Maybe I'm just getting more campy and cheesy in my old age.
I think this one is better than The Royale, though.
I agree.
Because it does have a point, right? Like, again, I think it's Kirk talking about the importance of play, which is kind of like sort of a high concept thing for an hour long, you know, sci-fi TV show, to be like, this is an important thing. You have to make time for leisure or leisure,
right,
as some people may say. And it's important to keep your mental health and your physical health balanced. Like, that's a pretty cool concept for a 60s show.
Despite, like, but how this planet is funky, but, like, you just have to sort of relax and let it be.
Yeah. Right. And have sex and with an ex, right with the simulacrum of an ex-partner of yours without their permission.
Right.
Right.
We don't know that backstory. It seems like there's something there that might not be so,
Yeah, I'm like, what's the story here? Did Kirk kill Ruth? Is that the story?
Because he's all like, why are you here?
Was there some accident? Like, was he drunk driving?
Is she dead? Come on.
He was drinking too. He was drinking too much synthahol, and he smashed into an abutment. Ruth died.
Everyone judges Barclay when he has fake people on the holiday. Exactly. This is just the same thing. You're on a
100%.
Exactly.
All right. So that was fun. A great discussion. Thank you both so much for joining us.
Totally.
Now, you have to tell our audience, and I think there's a tremendous amount of overlap between all of our audiences, but definitely want to give you a chance to tell our audiences about your podcast and where people can find you. Isaac, why don't you start off?
Sure. I'm Isaac from the Trek 365 podcast, where I do a daily podcast, which is exactly 365 seconds long. And everyone that's been on this podcast today has been on it. Yeah. I have guests come on and help from time to time. I'm counting down the 365 most memorable episodes of Trek. And I'd actually already done this one. This one's already on my list. So I talked about it a lot less than I did here today. But you can find me where you find this podcast. Just as a little fun fact, it comes out every day in the 365th minute of the day here.
Oh, you know what?
I release it at 6:05 a.m.
I didn't even clock that. That's really interesting, and I like that. I like the consistent use of 365. All right, Jesse.
Like, I'm a nerd, you know.
Jesse from Open Pike, let us know what's coming up, because next week is Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
Starting up.
So, as Patrick has so generously described us as the premier Strange New Worlds podcast, we tend to you know, try to be slightly more humble about it. But I agree with Patrick. He's correct. So we're Open Pike Night is a call-in podcast. It's the Strange New Worlds podcast where your personal logs are the prime directive. With season 3 of Strange New Worlds coming up, we really hope that you will stay in this podcasting app and give us a try, because we like to talk to the community about the show. And this season, we are trying to go like whole hog here. So we've already recorded episodes with the writers of the first 3 episodes of the season. Wow. Those will drop the same day that the episodes hit your streaming service. So you can listen to that, get some insight on how the episode was made, and then you can call in to Open Pike Night to share your thoughts. And you can do that by going to openpike.com. And if you want to follow us on social media, we're at Open Pike basically everywhere. If you're looking for something to help you get hyped for Strange New World Season 3, we just recently had a live Q&A with Melissa Navia, who plays Lieutenant Erica Ortegas. She flies the ship, and it was a ton of fun. That's the kind of thing that you can expect when you come to Open Pike Night. We've talked to everyone on the bridge crew. We've talked to almost every writer. We've interviewed the showrunners, we've interviewed the costume designers, the composers, the editors, cinematographers, like everybody. And we always put out a call to action so that you can send in your questions directly to those people. It's a great way to skip the convention lines. But if you are going to the upcoming Star Trek Las Vegas 2025, look for us, because we're going to have a panel in Vic's Lounge. And we can't wait to meet Trekkies in person. We know that that's not always an easy thing to do. This is it. I'm wrapping it up. That's all there is. Go to openpike.com. Listen to Open Pike Night. And thank you, Patrick and Jesse, for sharing your floor with us. I have called into your show many times. I think even before you had requested that people do that. And I talk about you guys a lot. This is top 2 Star Trek podcasts for me, and I only qualify that because I'm on a Star Trek podcast.
We really appreciate that, and
you should come back next week.
Yeah, just keep coming back.
Both of you guys, just
come hang out.
Just keep zooming.
But yeah, folks, should check out both of your podcasts. And one thing that's great is you're both established, and both of you have a bunch of backlogs of really excellent, fun content. There's so much to listen to and enjoy. And especially as we get into Strange New Worlds, we're really excited for Open Pike's coverage. But Trek 365, I mean, it is so fun to have those more bite-sized bits of awesomeness and hilarity and joyfulness every day. And it's a tremendous amount of work, and it's amazing what Isaac's been able to pull off. So we're excited to see what keeps coming on down the pike. No pun intended.
No.
All right. And for It's Got Star Trek, you know, same deal at It's Got Star Trek everywhere, you know, social media, website, all that jazz, YouTube and all that business. Feedback at It's Got Star Trek if you'd like to get in touch with us. And Jesse?
Patrick, again, because I love and respect Dan so much, I have to point out that you never said which numbered episode of It's Got Star Trek this
is. You know, you're right.
Yeah.
And I think it's 296. I'm pretty sure. I have to, like, hold on. I'm going to look at the...
I think that sounds...
Here, look. Right. I'm going to go... Here. This is a perfect use for the It's Got Star Trek website. It's gotstartrek.com. Type in that in.
Oh, it's loading locked. It up.
You can search by Star Trek show.
All like right.
Which episode?
So the last episode that's up there is number 295. Time it again. So yes, indeed, I was correct. This is episode 296. Thank you very much, Jesse. I appreciate it. It would have I would be listening back to this, editing it, and it would really aggravate me that I never said the number of the episode.
We're coming up on 300.
We are coming up on 300, and we have a fun little special episode.
It will be special.
We'll have some fun there. Lot to juggle coming up with the, you know, all this fun stuff going on. But in the whole podcast, the Trek podcast universe, new Star Trek always means a lot of activity and energy. So it's going to be a fun time for our podcasts and the ones you've heard about tonight, and of course all the other ones out there, and the folks producing Trek art and fan fiction and just, you know, putting fun stuff on Blue Sky and all that. So it's a fun time to be a Trek fan. So anyway, with all that, we'll talk to you it's going to be the first episode of Strange New Worlds next week. Bye.
And how do you explain them?
Oh,
Them. Well, I was thinking about a little cabaret I know, and Rigel, too. And there were these two girls in a chorus line there. And, well, here they are. Well, after all, I am on shore leave.
And so am I.
Oh, yes, so you are. Well, girls, I suppose you can turn something up.